Chapter 7. How the Qin State Unified China by Turning Itself into an MMO.
So, Qin Shi Huang's virtual form floated in the fancy living room of Simon and Melissa's condo. We direly need to strengthen your spiritual connection to me.
Huddling on a redwood sofa padded with beige cushions, Zack carved his hands through his hair. He peered outside the floor-to-ceiling windows.
A breathtaking view of Shanghai lit up with the million neon lights that only a world-class big city could have glittered beyond the glass. A gauzy mist, or maybe just smog, hung over the city, hazing the lights and smearing the tops of the highest skyscrapers.
The streets glowed like orange tunnels between a jungle of buildings. The Huangpu River, labeled by his portal lens, cut through it all like a thick serpent, reflecting the lights in puddles of neon. So this was China, Shanghai, China, the most populous city of the most populous country on Earth. Zack didn't know what he'd expected, but it was simultaneously so similar, yet so different from New York, that it left him disoriented, like he'd been dropped into an alternate dimension. If he remembered the few stories that his mom would tell about his dad correctly, this had been where they'd gone to university and met each other. He wondered what it'd been like to see this city through their eyes, if his dad had ever regretted risking all the light and glamour to speak up for the voiceless, if his mom had ever regretted having to leave it behind forever. Had they ever looked at this very condo building, not knowing that one day their son would sit in it, screwing up a supernatural mission to save China? Would they be proud of him for trying at all, or angry that he was putting himself in so much danger? Melissa sat on a different couch, hugging her knees and not looking at Zack. He hadn't realized how badly he'd messed up the battle until he put his portal lens back on and saw that her chi had dropped to about a third left. He'd apologized to her so many times on the way here, but she wouldn't speak to him. Her face was shaded with rectangular shadows. The living room chandelier was hung full of peachwood tablets with Chinese characters written on them, which could supposedly ward off demons. But not all of them, Simon had warned. And Zack's spirit was so weak that he'd be at the mercy of any who made it in. He shrank against the couch. Fake as they'd been, his mom's pained cries haunted him. What if they failed this whole mission because of him? Was her spirit suffering in the demon's clutches? He was too scared to ask. Show me documentaries, he said, head low. Maybe if he'd paid more attention to the one on the plane, he would have had a stronger connection to Qin Shi Huang's magic. I'll watch them all.
That won't be enough. Qin Shi Huang rubbed his virtual chin in thought. Right now, the most efficient thing you could do would be to touch something that was important to me during my lifetime. In traditional Chinese belief, the spirit, or soul, it doesn't matter what you call it, is divided into many parts, classified as either Hun or Po. Hun are the lightweight and ethereal parts, which ascend away from the body after someone's passing. Po are the heavy and corporeal parts, which stay in the mortal realm, because they have to be bound to something. How it works in reality is that every passing moment, a mortal sheds a little bit of their Po. The more value they attach to something, the more of their spirit lingers on it. Since you were born with a piece of my spirit, if you come in contact with an artifact I cherished, you could absorb the portion of my Po on it.
You mean something like the Terracotta Army? Zack thought of Qin Shi Huang's famous army of life-sized clay soldiers. Even when he'd known nothing of Qin Shi Huang, he'd known about those. Qin Shi Huang huffed.
Those weren't actually important to me. The only reason you're all so impressed is because you haven't dug up the rest of my mausoleum.
It's true,
Simon chimed in from the other end of Zack's couch.
Zack tried not to think too much into why Simon was sitting so far away from him.
If you look in the history books, there's not a single mention of the Terracotta Army. The descriptions of the mausoleum were all about the star chart, made of glowing gems in the burial chamber's ceiling. The ever-burning lamps filled with mermaid oil, and the replica of China with mountains made of bronze and rivers of mercury. Lots of mercury.
So we're going there? Zack asked.
Eventually. The plan is to go there, Qin Shi Huang said. However, there's one item right in Shanghai that I cherish deeply. The measuring vessel of Shangyang.
He raised a hand as if offering something. A wave of polygons conjured a virtual rotating device above his palm.
It looked like a rectangular rice scoop made of heavily tarnished metal.
This represented the standard measurement of one weight unit in Qin, then all of China after my conquests. Currently, it's on display in the Shanghai Museum.
So we're gonna go there and ask them to let me touch it? Zack raised both brows, hopeful, though a bad feeling bubbled inside him.
Of course not, Melissa finally spoke up. It's a priceless artifact. To have any hope of touching it, we'd have to sneak in. Duh.
She leapt to her feet.
Let's go.
Now? Zack recoiled against the couch.
Of course. These protections aren't foolproof.
Melissa pointed at the chandelier full of peachwood tablets.
How are we supposed to sleep if we're worried about the Yellow Emperor influencing another trickster demon to come make you kill us or something?
But shouldn't you stay here and rest?
Please.
She marched toward the door and tugged open the coat closet, revealing a row of fashionable coats, jackets, and ponchos over several shelves of shoes.
As if I would miss out on a museum heist. You wouldn't happen to know anything about Shangyang, would you?
Simon asked Zack on the drive to the museum. They sat together in the back while Ya Ling drove. Melissa had called shotgun to no challengers.
Cruising alongside multiple lanes of other cars, they passed under elevated stacks of twisting and winding concrete roads, lit a spooky sci-fi blue at the bottoms.
Shanghai was a lot more enthusiastic about LEDs than New York.
Just assume I don't know anything about anything next time, Simon.
Zack flashed a weak smile.
All right. Well, if you're gonna get power from his artifact, you'll have to understand its significance. So, I guess I gotta tell you about him.
Simon double-tapped the air in front of his portal lens to open a new window. Then he raised his hands to typing position. A virtual keyboard appeared beneath his fingers. He typed something into the search bar.
He was the guy who made the Qin state so powerful that just 100 years later, Qin Shi Huang was able to conquer all of China. He did it by basically turning the country into a... What do you call those big online games again? Games like World of Warcraft. Sorry, forgetting the English.
MMOs? Massively multiplayer online games? Zack rested his elbow on the car window. Ribbons of city lights streamed outside, almost in time with the Mandarin hip-hop thumping from the radio.
Yes, he basically turned Qin into one of those.
What's with all these video game comparisons?
Hey, we are a proud gamer nation.
Simon scrolled through the search results hovering in front of him.
Qin had ranks and everything. 20 of them. You leveled up by turning in the heads of enemies you defeated in battle. The higher ranked, the more land and servants you got.
Seriously?
Yep. Supposedly, the armies of other countries would see Qin soldiers charging at them with severed heads dangling from their belts. They became an unstoppable war machine. In just decades. All because of Shangyang's reforms.
With two fingers, Simon moved a virtual picture toward Zack. It was a half-bust white stone statue of a stern-looking man in a brooding pose. Is that him? He looks mean.
He was. Well, he was strict. His laws were so intense that Qing was basically the world's first police state. If you knew your neighbor committed a crime, yet you didn't report it, you'd be punished along with them. He even died because of his own laws when the old king who liked him died and a new king who didn't like him took the throne. Xiangyang tried to run away from Qin, but no inn would let him stay anonymously because of his own law that inns had to check all travelers' identification slips. So he soon got caught and executed. He's the reason that whenever Chinese people think Qin, we think strict and ruthless. Fun fact, the Fire Nation in Avatar was partially based off of them.
Zack gaped. Are you telling me I'm spiritually bound to real-life Fire Lord Ozai?
Pretty much. Except, you know, if Ozai had actually conquered everything, and was a waterbender, and, well, no genocide.
Oh boy. Zack sank lower in his seat. His seatbelt strained against his stomach. His portal lens suddenly felt heavy as a brick over his nose.
But anyway, there was a reason for the strictness. Before Xiangyang came along, Qin had been wasting away at the very west of China because lazy nobles had all the power and riches, so the peasants saw no point in working hard. Xiangyang changed everything by following a philosophy called legalism. It was all about how the law is the most important thing, not bloodline or background. So he may have been strict, but he was strict to everybody under equal terms. He shattered the privileges of the rich nobles and made it so no matter what you were born as, if you could make Qin stronger, you could have a good life. Qin became the land of opportunity. Peasants from other countries were obviously super intrigued about this, and Qin lured them in by promising them plenty of extra perks if they came.
That kind of sounds like America. Zack looked at the bust of Xiangyang in a new light.
America in theory.
Simon raised a brow. Patches of neon swiveled across his face from all kinds of flashy signs in front of stores and buildings.
I'd say the immigrants to Qin had a better chance of achieving the Qin dream than people nowadays with the American dream.
Zack wished he could refute that, but couldn't. Not when his highly educated mom had been working mostly retail for a decade now.
Plus, Simon continued, unlike the rest of the world, America still won't use the metric system. That is so not what Qin would have stood for. Part of legalism is that a state can only be strong when it has clear standards everywhere. So Xiangyang standardized all measurement systems in Qin. Qin Shi Huang later pushed the same standards across China.
Simon flicked over what looked like an academic analysis picture of the vessel. Lines of ancient Chinese text from its sides and bottom were magnified and highlighted. Two translations appeared for Zack, telling of how they commemorated what Xiangyang and Qin Shi Huang had done respectively. A sudden nostalgic feeling hit him, pumping his heart faster. Maybe the piece of Qin Shi Huang's spirit inside him was resonating with the text. Simon went on.
Qin Shi Huang usually gets all the credit for unifying China, but he knew he couldn't have done it without Xiangyang's work 100 years before. He was such a big fan of Xiangyang and legalism that he also standardized all the currencies across China then, and the width of the roads, so carriages would stop running into problems, and the Chinese script, so communication became way easier. Honestly, these standardized systems are probably why China kept coming back together, no matter how many times it shattered into civil war. You hear about empires built by Alexander the Great and Genghis Khan and Napoleon, but where are they now? China is the only one that lasted, and it's all because of what this vessel represents.
Simon looked extremely proud of this.
Yet Zack couldn't help but feel a little unnerved by all this talk of standardization. Whenever an empire or country pushed for everyone to be the same or do the same, there were inevitably those who suffered because they couldn't help but be different. And Qin Shi Huang's China didn't sound like a place that tolerated difference. With Zack's track record of being different, if he had been born back then, would Qin Shi Huang have allowed him to live? Zack debated whether to ask this out loud, but swallowed his words in the end. This wasn't time to start an argument. "Wow," he just remarked at the picture of the simple-looking Shangyang vessel. Knowing its history really did make a huge difference to how he saw it. "Man, Simon, how do you know so much history?" Simon shrugged.
"Most people in China do. History's really important to us. These were like my bedtime stories."
"Your bedtime stories were about mean law dudes and people cutting off the heads of their enemies for level-ups?"
"Yours weren't?"
Simon gave Zack a confused look. Zack didn't know how to respond before Simon laughed and said,
"Okay, fine. Melissa and I probably know a lot more than the average Chinese kid. We had to study up to make our magic stronger. Besides, I'm from a scholar family. My mom's a history professor, and my dad's an archaeologist."
"Whoa! Wouldn't they be stoked to meet the spirits of real emperors?"
"They would."
Simon's gaze drifted beyond the front window. More LEDs outlined distant skyscrapers in the haze ahead.
"Oh, man, they would. But I can't break my promise to Tang Taizong, to keep him a secret."
"What would happen if you did? Are you under some kind of magical pact? Would he hurt you?" Zack hesitated in asking, nervous that Tang Taizong might pop out and throw hands. But Simon had said that the emperors usually weren't watching everything through their eyes. To keep their spirit signatures as low as possible, they hibernated, like closed laptops, only to awaken when Simon and Melissa called to them in their heads. Then they would either emerge shallowly to give advice as mental voices or to take over altogether if Simon and Melissa could no longer handle the situation.
"No, there's no magical pact, and I'm not doing it 'cause I'm scared of being punished. I legit owe him big time."
Simon bowed his head, twirling his thumbs.
"My little brother has cerebral palsy. My family struggled for years to keep up with our medical bills, until Tang Taizong got me all kinds of opportunities with his smarts. It's only right that I repay him by doing this mission perfectly."
Zack hummed, nodding. No wonder Simon was fine with going along with this demon-fighting, museum-heisting madness. He was doing it for his family, too. Zack nudged his head toward Melissa and whispered, "What about her? Is she really risking her life just to become a pop star?"
"Mel?"
Simon blinked, then smiled while snorting.
"I'm pretty sure she'd risk her life for fun, even if there was no promise at the end."
Melissa whipped around, seatbelt tugging at her shoulders.
"I can hear you, you."
Something rammed into the side of the car. Screams spurted out of the mall. The impact choked Zack against his seatbelt. Ya Ling swerved the car, its tires screeching. Car horns blared behind them. Someone dressed in all leather, despite the warm summer night, kept chase beside them on a motorcycle. His eyes shone white through his helmet's dark visor.
"Oh no, that man is being possessed by Jing Ke."
Qin Shi Huang's voice rose in Zack's portal lens. A tag appeared. Jing Ke lived, to 227 BCE. Assassin who went down in legend because Qin Shi Huang was the one he tried to kill, even though the assassination failed. Posed as an envoy from the Yan state, claiming he wanted to present key maps to Qin Shi Huang in surrender, actually hid a poison-soaked dagger in the map and whipped it out while Qin Shi Huang was distracted by the geographical details. Chased him around a palace pillar before Qin Shi Huang finally pulled out his very long sword and retaliated. Do not imagine this as a scene out of Tom and Jerry.
The Yellow Emperor really knows exactly who to send to piss me off,
Qin Shi Huang said, pissed off. The Jing Ke possessed man revved his motorcycle.
Swinging away, then back, he slammed again into the car, shattering the window beside Zack.
Glass shards ruptured over him. He yelped, shielding his head. Yan Ling slammed her foot on the gas pedal. With a vroom, the car lurched forward faster. Warm, gritty wind poured against Zack's face, gagging him with the smell of gasoline. They rushed right toward a collision with the car ahead.
No, no, no!
Zack shrieked. Yan Ling jerked the steering wheel to the side. They narrowly avoided the car, screeching to the next lane. A louder symphony of long honks blasted through the night. Simon screamed with Zack, then suddenly stopped.
Xuan Wu Man Ji Bian,
he choked out.
Ku at the Xuan Wu Gate,
came the subtitle. A chunk of his chi meter drained away. With tongues of red light like flames, his spirit bow whooshed to life in his hands.
That bow comes from Tang Taizong shooting his brothers during his infamous coup for the throne,
Qin Shi Huang hastily explained, causing the bow to appear clearer to Zack, turning from mist-like to a texture more like molten metal.
Its spirit arrows are powerful, but always reflect a portion of the pain they deal back to its shooter.
Simon unbuckled his seatbelt with shaky fingers, then leaned across Zack to aim an arrow out the window. The wind blew his hair back, making him look more like Xu Da Li than ever. As he pulled his radiant bowstring, his elbow dug into Zack's chest, making Zack wheeze.
Sorry,
Simon blurted, but didn't relent his movements. The spirit bow's heat baked against Zack's face. He strained to get a glimpse of what was happening outside. Jing Ke came up in the rear window, weaving through honking and screeching cars. Just as Simon loosed an arrow, Ya Ling had to swerve into another lane. Simon tumbled against the back of the driver's seat.
This isn't going to work,
he steadied himself while grimacing at what must have been the arrow's recoil pain.
We're never going to lose him in Shanghai traffic.
We're almost to the museum, Melissa said.
We can get there on foot. Ya Ling, pull to the curb.
With another tire-squealing turn through a gap between cars, Ya Ling did so. Simon and Melissa popped their doors in sync, then leapt onto the wide sidewalk with an agility that suggested they'd done stuff like this before. Zack stumbled to follow them across the polished pavement, which glistened with neon from the signs around storefronts. Startled pedestrians staggered back, shouting in concern, their faces bathed in electronic light. Jing Ke rode toward the sidewalk as well, cutting in front of furious drivers. He raised one hand like a claw. White spirit daggers shot out of his palm like a meteor shower. Zack cried out as one slashed through his shoulder. It didn't break flesh or draw blood, but pain burst through him where it hit, and his chi meter dropped a fraction. The daggers kept coming like white lasers. He reminded himself to ask later if the different colors of chi meant anything, because there'd been no pattern so far, nothing that indicated friend or enemy. With a growl, Simon threw Zack behind him and loosed a red spirit arrow at Jing Ke. Zack's heart stuttered at being protected like this. The arrow whizzed on a perfect trajectory. It curved away at the last second, as if repelled by a magnetic force.
Ay-ya,
Simon hissed through his teeth.
Tang Taizong says his arrows can't hurt him.
The bow dissipated from Simon's hands as he tugged Zack into a sprint down the sidewalk. Freaked out bystanders scrambled out of their way.
Seriously?
Zack bumbled through virtual ads that danced and shifted in his portal lens, common AR field.
Why not? I thought Jing Ke was a failed assassin. Yeah, but his story is so popular that he's become much more powerful in death. Part of the assassination legend is that when it happened, the strict Jin laws against moving through the throne room without permission prevented any officials from helping Jing Shi Huang, which means you're the only one who can vanquish Jing Ke.
While he explained this, Melissa lagged behind and activated her flash bomb power. Even though Zack didn't bear the full force of it, he winced as it gleamed off the buildings nearby like lightning. Screams erupted all around them. The people ahead, who had turned to gawk at the commotion, clutched their eyes in agony. Cars screeched and rear-ended one another. The spirit daggers stopped darting toward them. Jing Ke had crashed into another car.
That won't stop him for long,
Melissa warned while catching up.
Yeah, so...
Simon looked at Zack while bolting past the temporarily blinded masses.
Wang Fu Jian, bear your sword, my king.
Bear your sword, my king,
Melissa shouted as well.
Bear your sword, my king.
Qin Shi Huang spoke up.
When Jing Ke was chasing me around the pillar, I couldn't get my sword out of its scabbard, at first because it was built more for ceremonial length than functionality. I had to be reminded by my officials to draw it over my back. This is the annoying summoning condition. I need others to keep chanting for it. Now imagine this. Imagine how badly you need your sword while being chased by an assassin.
Isn't that literally what's happening to us? Zack cried.
Then you should be plenty inspired.
Bear your sword, my king,
Simon and Melissa chanted over and over as they barreled through neon auras and virtual ads of dancing mascots and beautiful people holding up products. A length of coldness grew against Zack's back. He looked over his shoulder. A long black spirit sword appeared behind him. But when he went to grab it, his fingers passed through it, no better than grasping smoke.
Caw!
Qin Shi Huang exclaimed. No translation came, but it sounded like a bad word.
You can't even channel enough magic to sustain the sword's construct.
Sorry?
Then we have to get you to that museum, fast.
Simon charged toward a rack of rental bikes. With his portal lens, he scanned a QR code on three of them in turn. Green dots of light blinked alive beside the codes. The locks over their wheels sprang open.
Get on, but don't put your feet on the pedals, he said.
Zack clambered onto the one next to him. Copying Simon, he perched his feet on the bike frame, his knees scrunching close to his chest.
Zhao Ling Liu Jun,
Simon called out once Melissa straddled the third.
The six steeds of Zhao Mausoleum.
A phantom whinnying breezed past Zack's ear. Red spirit forms of horses appeared over the bikes, then seemed to absorb into them.
Jia!
Simon leaned back, making the front of his bike lift off the ground.
Whoa!
Zack snatched the handlebars tighter as the bikes careened out of the rack by themselves and then blitzed down the sidewalk. The six steeds of Zhao Mausoleum, Tang Taizong's six most prized warhorses, were immortalized as stone sculptures in his mausoleum. But he can only summon four at most now, because two of the sculptures were broken up, stolen by American smugglers, and brought to the Penn Museum at the beginning of the 20th century. Give them back, America! The warm night air blasted into Zack's face. They went so fast that he couldn't keep track of what they passed anymore. Just bright signs and shocked faces. The pedals spun into blurs. He desperately kept his feet out of their way. His stomach surged toward his throat. He'd never been on a motorcycle, but he was pretty sure this was how it felt to ride one. Streams of red light connected their three bikes. As Simon turned his bike into a side street, Zack's and Melissa's followed automatically. The sound of phantom galloping stormed through Zack's mind. He could only grip the handlebars like they were his sole anchor to reality, which, at this point, they pretty much were. Chapter 8. How Chinese Sherlock Holmes and Chinese Leroy Jenkins Can Help a Museum Heist. They stormed through narrow alleys and emptier, darker streets. Streets where most storefronts were shuttered with metal curtains and only a few shone open, spilling slabs of light onto the pavement. They zipped past the occasional street food vendor or people sitting outside on stools, fanning themselves with giant woven fans. All kinds of smells ripped past on the roaring wind. Delicious fried goods one second and sewage the next. Thankfully, they got to the Shanghai Museum before the speed and wind broke Zack in half. They rode up a ramp beside its front stairs and stopped before its glass doors. Zack's legs wobbled like noodles when he got off his bike.
Every cell in his body quivered with lingering energy, but he was the Flash, fresh out of the Speed Force. His butt throbbed from how hard he'd been clenching the seat. Sitting in front of a huge plaza, the museum had a design like a pot with a handle on top. Actually, on closer look, its roof had several handles, one facing each cardinal direction. If giants existed, and Zack was starting to suspect they did, they could probably lift the whole building up and go. So how are we getting past the security systems? Zack's teeth chattered like he'd touched a live wire.
We can't.
Melissa flipped her hair over her shoulders. It had fallen out of the tight bun she'd made before the drive and been blown to twice its volume, like she was ready to be on a magazine cover.
But Wu Zetian can summon someone who could. Cover me.
She folded her hands like she was praying and mouthed, Wu Zetian. That seemed to be an optional flare of drama, because Simon never did it when calling Tang Taizong to take over. Wu Zetian's virtual tag appeared as she opened her eyes in Melissa's place. She raised her hand in front of herself. Colorful panels appeared before her, looking suspiciously like the cards that represented your roster in Mythrealm, except instead of myth creatures, they each had a watercolor painting of a person in ancient Chinese garb. Zack couldn't tell if the panels were spiritual or virtual. Either way, he wouldn't be able to see them without his portal lens. With a flick of her hand, the cards scrolled past in a blur. She tapped and paused on a particular one, then splayed her fingers in front of it.
By the command of your emperor,
Wu Zetian's eyes beamed bright white.
Arise, Di Renjie, detective of legend.
Wind gusted in front of her, billowing her loose jacket and long hair. Zack shielded his eyes from the dust that slipped past his portal lens, but gasped when a network of white lines lit up across her body. They shone brilliantly on her bare face, neck, and hands, and mutedly under her clothes, especially her black leggings.
What's happening to her?
He raised his voice over the wind. He vaguely remembered a similar kind of network crawling over his skin during the Aiden battle, except his lines were black.
Her chi meridians are lighting up,
Simon explained, shielding his portal lens as well. Meridians?
The network that carries our chi through our bodies. It's what traditional Chinese medicine like acupuncture is based on, and this means she's conducting her qi really, really hard. The emperors can summon subordinates from their dynasty if they're also legendary, but it takes a lot of qi to fuel the magic.
The wind turned into strokes of white light, gathering into the form of an ancient Chinese official. He wore a round, bulging hat with two drooping flaps near his neck. The bottom of his belted tunic billowed above his boots. A tag appeared beside him. Di Renjie, Judge/Detective D, lived 360 to 700 CE, famous chancellor who served under Wu Zetian, managed to stay morally upright in a court terrorized by her secret police. One of the only people who could stand up to her, frequently serves as the protagonist of Chinese detective stories, is basically the Sherlock Holmes of China. Di Renjie opened his ethereal eyes. The wind died down, though a faint thread of light connected his chest to Wu Zetian's. With the grace of a cloud, he fell to his knees before her and prostrated himself with his hands flat on the ground.
May my emperor live for 10,000 years. 10,000 years, 10,000 upon 10,000 years.
Wu Zetian gave the first warm, non-smug smile that Zack had seen on her, but her eyes and meridians were still lit up, and her already low chi meter shrank steadily.
It's been a while, Chancellor D. Let's not waste time. Take care of this museum's security systems for us, will you? I'm sure you can crack it.
As your majesty commands.
Di Renjie sat back on his knees and nodded, then morphed into a curl of white light and burrowed into the museum beside its glass doors. Wu Zetian grunted
swaying on her feet. A shining link remained between her and the wall. Just as Zack waited in anticipation of what would happen, the growl of a motorcycle picked up in the distance. Oh, he glanced toward it, eyes going huge. Jingke had found them after all.
Renjie, hurry!
Wu Zetian slapped the wall. Nothing. The growl grew louder and closer, echoing across the plaza.
Zack spun in a panic, then went to try the glass doors.
Wait,
Simon held him back by the elbow.
Trust Di Renjie.
But
lights beamed on in the museum. The glass doors slid open by themselves. Zack, Simon, and Wu Zetian bolted in. The atrium looked more like a fancy hotel lobby than a museum, cutting through the building's four floors. The full moon loomed over a huge skylight in the ceiling, which looked like half a transparent soccer ball.
I must stay here. You two go on.
Wu Zetian backed against the wall beside the doors, peering out. The glowing white thread from her chest remained connected to the wall, her brows furrowed with strain.
Won't Jingke get you?
Zack exclaimed over his shoulder.
I'm not the one he wants. Besides, he wouldn't fight us in a museum.
Really? He wouldn't?
Yeah, he knows better, Simon ran ahead of Zack. Every artifact in here is a priceless part of our heritage.
But you still must hurry,
Wu Zetian called after them between heavy breaths. Her meridians ebbed in brightness.
I can't sustain Renjie for long. If I fail, the alarms will go off instantly.
As Zack followed Simon across the atrium, Qin Shi Huang flitted through a series of windows on Zack's portal lens and brought out the museum's augmented tour, pulsing labels like Ancient Chinese Sculpture Garden, Chinese Seal Gallery, and Number 2 Exhibition Hall floated in and out of Zack's view across the building's four floors. A Chinese Minority Nationalities art gallery on the top floor gave him pause. Bitterness curdled in him.
Funny how places like this pretended to be proud of minority nationalities like him and his family, while the government was locking so many of them up, re-educating them, and executing them in real life if they dared speak up.
Not a lot of Americans knew this, but China's population wasn't homogeneous. It had at least 56 ethnic groups. The biggest and most dominant one, Han, was what most people thought of when they heard Chinese person. But Zack's family wasn't one of them. They were Hui, a minority people with Islamic heritage, descended from Silk Road traders. The government had gotten less and less accepting of Muslims across the years, and Zack's dad had been jailed and executed for speaking up. Calming himself down for the sake of not losing his mom as well, Zack went with Simon into the ancient Chinese bronze gallery right on the first floor. The room full of glass displays lit up as they hurried in, dim and somber. Chills rose across Zack's arms. The instinct to be respectful crushed down on him, as if his ancestors were watching and judging through the dark, tarnished bronze vessels. His portal lens marked out each artifact with a slowly turning ring and a label of its name and era. His belly flipped at how old some of this stuff was. He passed a wine vessel, so intricate it looked like a real mythical creature turned to bronze by magic. Except it was from the late Shang Dynasty, 13th to 11th century BCE, over 3,000 years ago. Over 3,000 years, and yet it had survived for him to lay eyes on it. Simon skidded to a stop at a display case built into the wall, showcasing multiple small bronze artifacts. Zack felt a pull to it, and knew Shangyang's vessel was among them. It was so plain compared to the daggers and crossbow bolts it was displayed with, yet his portal lens encircled the vessel with a second ring, golden and pulsating, marking it as one of the museum's most prized treasures. Oh my God, Zack breathed. There it is.
I know, right?
Simon checked over the glass, blocking them from it.
Do we have to smash the case?
Zack eyed it, a tight feeling pinching his heart.
No, better to not mess up the other artifacts or leave a trace that we were here.
With a hard blink of his eyes, Simon's virtual tag changed to Tang Taizong's.
I've got my own legendary subordinate to summon, Tang Taizong said,
the sudden cockiness to his tone giving Zack whiplash compared to Simon's demure one.
Tang Taizong let his own roster cards appear.
He swept through them before settling on an armored warrior with a huge, messy beard.
By the command of your emperor, his eyes blazed red. Arise, Cheng Yao Jin, brash warrior of legend.
Wind picked up out of nowhere, stirring his hair. His meridians flushed like lines of lava under his skin. He pressed his hand against the glass. With licks of fiery light, the warrior gathered partially into form inside the display. His tag came with him.
Cheng Yao Jin,
lived 589 to 665 CE. Warrior who contributed much to the founding of the Tang Dynasty and Tang Taizong's coup for the throne. Served under the first three Tang emperors. Famous in folklore for showing up out of nowhere to save the day or disrupt whatever was going on. Star of the popular saying, then Cheng Yao Jin suddenly showed up halfway through. Used to describe unexpected disruptions to plans. Can be considered the Leroy Jenkins of ancient China. Zack briefly wondered who Leroy Jenkins was. Then remembered it was a really, really old internet meme about a guy who ruined a meticulously planned World of Warcraft raid by charging in headfirst while yelling his own name. Had Qin Shi Huang been checking out internet memes while in the portal lens?
Yo, boss!
Cheng Yao Jin looked down and around the case. Having just his head and one arm, the rest of him smeared out like red mist, connected through the glass to Tang Taizong's chest.
Aw, man, this is a tight fit.
Listen, Yao Jin, we need Xiangyang's measuring vessel. That scoop thing,
Tang Taizong pointed, speaking slowly. Zack got the sense that Cheng Yao Jin was not as smart as Di Renjie.
Just grab it and jump out with your teleporting power.
Sure thing, boss. It's this one, right?
Cheng Yao Jin pawed around for the measuring vessel.
Be very careful.
I got it.
His spirit hand closed around the vessel's thick handle. His fingers turned more opaque.
Ban Lu Shan Chaga Chen Jiao Jin.
Then Cheng Yao Jing suddenly showed up halfway through. He vanished, then reappeared outside the display case, form more complete. Zack staggered a step back.
Here, boss.
Cheng Yao Jin held up the vessel. The smell of rust drifted into Zack's nose.
Seize it!
Qin Shi Huang commanded near his ear. After a split second of hesitation about touching something so precious, Zack took it with both hands. An unnatural coldness surged into him through his fingers. A breath shuddered out of him. His knees wobbled and buckled. Images fluttered behind his eyes. A first-person view of pale hands examining the vessel, tracing the inscription on its side. Wavering light from an oil lamp reflecting off its bottom, which was still blank. Out of nowhere, a hot pulse of tears broke from Zack's eyes. It hurled him back to reality. He found himself on the floor, clutching the vessel to his chest. Startled, he touched his wet cheeks.
I think I just saw one of your memories, he said in disbelief.
Excellent,
Qin Shi Huang huffed.
That means this worked. Your Majesties, Di Renjie, spoke up through the museum speakers.
Her Majesty is running direly low on qi.
Yao Jin,
Tang Taizong commanded.
Yeah, put it back. I got it, boss.
Cheng Yao Jin motioned to take the vessel from Zack. Zack felt a resistance against giving it up, but knew it belonged in the protective case.
The moment he passed it over, Cheng Yao Jin invoked his legend again. He teleported back into the case and laid the vessel down exactly like before. Then he grinned and flashed a thumbs up with his single hand.
Tang Taizong released him. As Chen Yaojin dissipated, Tang Taizong teetered with a huge breath of relief. His red meridians faded. He composed himself the next second, glare sharpening.
All right, let's go.
They dashed back the way they had come. Near the doors, Wu Zetian leaned in anguish against the wall, meridians flickering. Sweat shone on her forehead. Her chi meter was close to running out.
Good luck, your majesties,
Di Renjie said through the overhead speakers. The doors opened. The moment they raced out of the building, Wu Zetian released him. As her meridians dimmed, she crumpled, almost collapsing to the ground. Tang Taizong caught her at the last second, supporting her. The museum's lights went out, better revealing Jing Ke at the bottom of the stairs leading into the plaza. He seemed to have been waiting there the whole time. Tang Taizong whipped his attention to Zack.
There, you're...
A shockwave swept through the air, shattering the glass doors behind them. Alarm lights switched on in the museum, flashing red. A cage-like gate slammed over the entrance.
Oh, boy,
Zack yelled, but couldn't hear himself. He couldn't hear the emperors either, though their mouths were definitely chanting,
Bear your sword, my king!
It wasn't working. No sword appeared behind him. The only thing he could hear was a sad guy's voice singing over a slow instrument. To Zax's shock, he knew the song was in ancient Chinese, and he could understand it without subtitles.
Oh, how the wind blows over the cold Yi River. Oh, how the brave heroes go where they shall never return.
On a closer look, someone was standing behind Jing Ke, back to his back, arm moving over a glowing instrument. Wave after wave of visible sound pulsed out from their direction, preventing Zack from hearing anything else. Qin Shi Huang.
Oh, not Gao Jianli.
Gao Jianli lived ? BCE. Jing Ke's musician friend who had sent him off to the assassination with a famous mourning song at the Yi River, tried to infiltrate the Qin Palace and complete the mission after Jing Ke died, got his identity busted before he could make an attempt. However, because he played the lute so well, Qin Shi Huang let him live as a court musician under the condition that he be blinded. Tried to kill Qin Shi Huang anyway by filling his lute with lead and taking a swing at Qin Shi Huang's head, but missed. Probably because he was blind. Jing Ke raised both arms. White spirit daggers shot out of his palms, even more aggressively than before. Zack zigzagged to dodge them, but many caught him, eating at his chi meter. He stumbled and doubled over from the pain, mouth springing open with a silenced scream. The new security gate prevented him from running back into the museum, leaving him wide open. He ran toward a pillar a little ways ahead, one of the two that held up a glass and concrete canopy over the entrance. Jing Ke and Gao Jianli sidestepped to another angle to get him. He darted around the pillar to evade the daggers, feeling a wild sense of deja vu. Though Jing Ke would definitely not make the same mistake of coming up the stairs to do a direct chase, as he did over 2,000 years ago. Tang Taizong summoned his spirit bow and tried to shoot at Jing Ke and Gao Jianli, but his arrows deflected away like before. Wu Zetian dashed down the stairs, spirit whip shining in her hand, but the farther she got, the harder the sound waves kept her back. Baring his clenched teeth, Tang Taizong dissolved his bow and fumbled a lighter and a piece of wood out of his messenger bag. He set the wood alight, the orange glow of the flame dancing over his face. Combined with his shining red eyes, it made him look like a demon. He hurled the wood through the museum's security gate and spread his hands like a magician. The flame flared brighter. Sprinkler water gushed down from the ceiling, splashing on the floor in foamy puddles. Zack hoped every display case inside was watertight. They should be, right?
Tang Taizong gestured frantically at Zack, and Zack knew what he wanted him to do. Still bearing the pain of the spirit dagger hits, Zack waved his arm at the museum, willing the water to come to him. It did, flooding out through the gate, an opposing, straining force clenched inside him, cold as slush, but excitement rushed over it, pretending he was a waterbender. Well, he was a waterbender. He heaved the water down the stairs with a thrust of his arms. There wasn't enough to knock the assassins down or away, but it caught them off guard. The onslaught of spirit daggers veered wide. Gao Jianli's singing went out of sync with his lute playing, and the sound waves weakened. Zack and Wu Zetian both took the chance to charge down toward them. Swinging his hand, Zack lurched the water against the assassins' legs over and over, like tides lapping two rocks at the shore. Qin Shi Huang, close your eyes, Zack did. Wu Zetian used her blinding flash. When it was safe to look again, the assassins appeared more distraught than ever. The spirit daggers flew even more erratically. Zack could now see that Gao Jianli was playing a green spirit lute with a spirit stick. Qin Shi Huang,
that construct will scatter the moment he lets go of it.
Qin Shi Huang,
pry his fingers open with the water.
Zack swung his hand up and flashed it open, willing the water to surge up and do the same to Gao Jianli's grip. Then he made it go higher and jut into Gao Jianli's nostrils. The melody stopped. The singing ended in a cry of pain. Other sounds flooded into Zack's ears again, not unlike when he'd blown his eardrums back to normal after the plane ride. Alarms blared from the museum. Police sirens wailed closer. But over the top of it all,
bare your sword, my king!
Wu Zetian and Tang Taizong yelled in sync. The same cold length of sensation from before pressed across Zack's back. Except this time, when he reached for it, his hand closed around a solid handle. The blinded Jing Ke pinpointed his location at the same moment. As he fired a more concentrated torrent of daggers at Zack, Zack swung the sword over his shoulder. It knocked the daggers aside. It was cold as ice, black as night, and long as his whole arm. He shivered at the power that radiated from it.
This is a spirit construct of the Tai Yu sword, heirloom sword of Qin.
Qin Shi Huang explained out loud, tone holding a reverence Zack didn't think he was capable of.
It has passed through the hands of every king of Qin, our ancestors.
Zack shivered again. It was surreal, being reminded that Qin Shi Huang wasn't just the start of his lineage, but part of it. That they were both part of something greater than themselves. Zack swore he could hear hundreds of voices whispering from the sword. Then, Qin Shi Huang's command cut through them all, telling him to repeat a certain phrase in Chinese. Without need of a subtitle, Zack understood it as, "The King of Qin runs around the pillar." It was a weird thing to shout, given that he was no longer running around the pillar, but he'd learned not to question things. When he went to repeat it, the Chinese flowed out of him like water, like magic. Another wave of coldness flushed through him, icier than ever. His chi meter dropped a massive amount. His meridians turned black, visible across his bare arms. The coldness pooled particularly in his eyes, and he suspected they'd turned pure black as well. The warm night air shimmered and warped. The incoming daggers dragged to a crawl. The alarms and sirens dropped as low as beast noises. Time itself had slowed down, just like it had during the Aiden fight.
Run, Zack, run,
Qin Shi Huang urged. Veering out of the way of the slowly inching spirit daggers, Zack hurtled down the last of the stairs. More phantom memories coursed through his head. Memories of being chased around a bronze pillar, wishing time would slow down like this as Jing Ke's original dagger gleamed in his wobbling view. A fear that wasn't his own exploded through him like a shot of poison. A fear laced with rage.
How dare you try to stop me? Zack thought.
With a harsh swing of his elbow, he thrust his sword deep into Jing Ke's chest. Zack had never, ever stabbed anyone before. The shock of doing it jarred his mind out of its haze of fury. Terror welled up in its place. Terror that he had actually killed someone. Time crashed back to normal. The alarms and sirens returned to their original shrill screeching. Jing Ke and Gao Jianli convulsed against the spirit blade together, grunting. The sword was so long that it had gotten them both. To Zack's huge relief, no blood came out. He hadn't made any physical wounds.
The emperors had told him that you could vanquish a spirit in two ways, with a spirit weapon, or by bringing the host body so close to death that the spirit had to escape it, like what Qin Shi Huang had tried to do to Aiden with the storm water.
Zack liked the first option way more. Suddenly, Jing Ke snatched Zack's wrist. His grip was cold as death. Behind his helmet visor, the white glow of his eyes sputtered like failing lights.
"Stop helping this tyrant!"
He strained to get out in ancient Chinese beneath the sirens. His nails dug into Zack's arm. Yet another flood of memories bombarded Zack's mind, but they were much different from before. These were memories of people screaming as soldiers charged into their villages, men being dragged in chains to work on massive construction projects, court officials being buried alive in pits, scrolls of writing being burned in heaps. Before Zack could react, the lights in Jing Ke's helmet faded. He and Gao Jianli, or really, the normal people possessed by them, slumped against the sword. Zack's hand bounced away from the spirit hilt. It dissolved, letting the pair collapse to the pavement in a tangled heap. Zack stared at them, breathing heavily. The alarms and sirens wailed ever louder, gripping his skull with their intensity.
"Good job, kid."
Tang Taizong hopped down the stairs.
He sprayed the pair in their faces with Meng Po broth, prying up formerly Jing Ke's helmet visor to get him.
"Now let's get out of here."
"Wait, are we just going to leave them?" Zack spun as Tang Taizong rushed back up the stairs. Tang Taizong eyed the unconscious pair, then Zack.
"We can't take them with us."
"But won't the police think they were the ones who broke into the museum?"
"Please."
Wu Zetian joined Tang Taizong up the stairs, sounding exhausted.
"They've probably made sure to possess scumbags. Mobsters. People who belong in prison anyway."
She snorted.
"Heroes and their rules. So predictable."
Tang Taizong laughed.
"I know, right?"
Zack stiffened, the sirens echoing between his ears. He'd had plenty of, what? Moments with the emperors, and highly suspected they weren't great people. But this was the kind of conversation that only full-blown supervillains would have.
Chapter 9. How to Cope with Being a Supervillain's Hench Boy. Zack lay awake in his bed, staring at the ceiling. It was 3 a.m., yet Shanghai dazzled on beyond his windows. They'd taken the metro back to the condo. Ya Ling had gotten tangled in the police investigation about the motorcycle chase and serial car accidents. Thankfully, no one had gotten seriously hurt from those, and the police had released Ya Ling after they'd arrested the two men, Jing Ke and Gao Jianli, had possessed and connected their motorcycle to the incidents. The attempted museum robbery was now all over the Chinese news. Wu Zetian had guessed right. The men were ex-felons with nasty criminal records. Nobody would believe the stories they were surely telling about, not remembering anything. Zack's squad had officially gotten away with a museum heist, and he now had stronger powers
and resistance against low-level demon spirits. Yet he couldn't find it in himself to celebrate. The horrible images from Jing Ke kept replaying in his mind, and so did his words, looping like an annoyingly catchy song with a very unfortunate subject.
Stop helping this tyrant.
Ya Ling had gotten her memory erased too, and even though she didn't seem to mind before or after getting sprayed in the face with Meng Po broth, Zack couldn't help but see it as another disturbing, questionable move by the Emperor's. He pawed his phone from his nightstand and tried to search up Qin Shi Huang, tyrant. When the page didn't load, he remembered that Western sites like Google didn't work in China. The Great Firewall of China, Simon had called it. When Zack had first realized he couldn't open his messenger app to talk to Jess, his mom's friend, who'd promised to send him updates about her condition. Apparently, the Chinese internet was like a parallel dimension from everything else, with a whole different set of popular sites. Baidu instead of Google, Weibo instead of Twitter, and so on. Simon had had to install a VPN app on Zack's phone so Zack could reroute his IP address and contact Jess. Of course, there'd been no real updates on his mom beyond, "She's still sleeping, honey." A new message bubble popped onto Zack's screen right over the failed search tab. Qin Shi Huang,
curious about me?
A spasm racked through Zack's hands. He dropped his phone. It smacked down on his nose.
Ow!
He held his aching nose for several seconds, eyes watering, before scrambling to unpair his phone's Bluetooth connection to his portal lens.
It didn't stop Qin Shi Huang from speaking through the portal lens propped up on the nightstand.
If you wanted to know more about me, I'm right here, you know.
Zack stared at the portal lens for a long time, then put it on. He wasn't going to get any sleep like this anyway. He was pretty jet-lagged. Qin Shi Huang appeared in his virtual form.
So?
Jing Ke called you a tyrant, Zack said, tongue-tied.
Many people do. Some even list me among history's worst tyrants. If you check the Wikipedia page for tyrant, it lists me as an example. And it's true that much of what I did would be considered tyrannical by you modern people. But it was all to further my goals. I had a clear agenda, and I worked my entire life at achieving it. I wasn't one of those knuckle-headed tyrants who wasted their power on self-destructive indulgence. Like, fine, Nero, to give you a Eurocentric example. Sometimes I get called the Nero of China because we both had issues with our mothers. I resent that. I was far more productive than he ever was.
Zack felt like this speech should have come with a hashtag not all tyrants hashtag. He gulped.
But you killed a ton of innocent people, didn't you?
Qin Shi Huang rolled his eyes behind his headdress beads.
I was a conqueror. Of course I did.
Do you think there's a single conqueror in history, or even a single ruler of a major country, who doesn't have innocent blood on their hands?
What do you say about the masses of innocent Persians killed by your precious Alexander the Great? What about the innocent black and indigenous people who suffered under George Washington? If I recall correctly, almost all of your American founding fathers owned slaves, despite claiming to be advocates for liberty for all. At least I never spewed such a blatant lie.
Then what are you really trying to do? Here, in the modern world?
We must reinforce the spirit portal plug before the ghost month. Remember?
Qin Shi Huang blinked blankly.
I thought we filled you in on this.
Zack was starting to doubt that that was their true plan. Sweat beaded along his hairline.
But you're admitting you're a tyrant. You guys act like supervillains. You have a henchwoman. So how can you be up to anything good?
How many times must I...
Annoyance twitched across Qin Shi Huang's face.
Do you think that just because I don't cower or hold back when it comes to getting what I want, it must automatically be bad for the world? This black and white view is going to mean real trouble for you growing up, boy.
Zack twisted his covers in his hands.
But is reinforcing the portal plug the only thing you want to do? What happens after?
I help you achieve your greatest desire to honor your efforts in this mission, of course. Make you stronger, like I promised.
Embarrassment flamed in Zack's face.
That's not my biggest wish. You caught me at a bad time. What I really want is for my mom to be safe, healthy, and to stop having to work so hard.
Qin Shi Huang shrugged.
Very well. I could easily make that happen, too. I have to say, though,
he gave Zack a look that Zack didn't like.
Instincts don't lie. You have an ambition for strength and power inside you, just like me when I was your age. I can see it.
There is no way we are anything alike.
Oh?
Let me tell you a story, boy. A story about how you and I are not so different.
Qin Shi Huang closed his eyes. In a wave of polygons, his form shifted into a boy, even younger than Zack, a boy with messy, matted hair and torn peasant clothes. But he opened the same intense black eyes, ringed by deep, dark, haven't slept in a thousand years under eye circles. When he spoke again, his voice had become a kid's.
See, what most summaries of my life leave out is that I may be known as Qin Shi Huang, but I didn't grow up a Qin boy. I was actually born in the capital of the Zhao state, Qin's greatest enemy at the time.
A major war had broken out between Qin and Zhao a couple of years before I was born.
It had ended with Qin burying 400,000 Zhao soldiers alive and then besieging its capital. My father, a minor Qin prince, serving as a political hostage in that same city, fled while my mother was pregnant with me, leaving us there.
So, yes, I was born a prisoner in an enemy city besieged by my own great-grandfather after he had killed almost their entire adult male population.
Wow, yeah, sounds exactly like my life, Zack mumbled.
Let me finish, Qin Shi Huang snapped. For the first 9 years of my life, I was ruthlessly hated because of a connection to a kingdom and father I had never seen, who had abandoned me and my mother.
He clutched the torn, stained collar of his ratty kid clothes. Cuts and bruises appeared on his face.
Only by a miracle did we make it out alive into the Qin Palace.
Well, if you count money as a miracle.
A very rich merchant had schemed to make my father the new king of Qin. Overnight, my mother became queen, and I became crown prince of a kingdom I knew nothing about. I hadn't grown up around any Qin folk, and it wasn't as if the Zhao had let me learn anything about Qin.
Qin Shi Huang's form shifted again, this time on par with Cinderella. His face full of cuts and bruises vanished, his long hair untangled and became half tied up into a neat style. His ratty clothes turned to black silk robes, but his eyes remained the same, haunted and hateful, jarring on such a young form.
So I was living a paradox, he continued. I didn't belong anywhere.
In Zhao, they hated me for being Qin. In Qin, even among all the riches of the royal palace, they would whisper about me. I didn't speak like them. I couldn't read their writing. I wasn't nearly as well-mannered or charismatic as my younger half-brother, who my father had had with a proper princess of another state. Unlike my mother, who was a mere dancer. Maybe I would have been deposed in favor of my brother, but...
His form morphed to about Zack's age. His black robes became way fancier, gaining layers and embroidery of gold dragons. The tall headdress with the bead curtains appeared over his head.
Just 3 years later, our father suddenly passed away. At 13, I became the new king of Qin. Traditionally, Chinese people set our birth age at 1 year old, so I was biologically 12 when I took the throne. The same age as you. Imagine that.
Zack struggled to do so. Running an entire country at his age, he couldn't.
So there I was, 12 years old, ruling a kingdom with the tongue of a foreigner.
Jinxi Huang lifted his arms. His sleeves were so wide, they fell near the floor.
If you think becoming king made me safe, you're dead wrong. It made me the most intensely watched person in the warring states. Qin was by far the most powerful kingdom then, so everyone in the 6 enemy states wanted me dead. Quite a few Qin folk did as well, like my dozens of uncles. My father had over 20 brothers. So, with everyone either trying to kill me or control me, I had to stay on guard every second of my life. I slept with a dagger under my pillow. I spooked at every shadow, at every off-seeming piece of food. I fought off an invasion by a coalition of the 6 other states. I quelled a rebellion by my brother and grandmother. I crushed a coup by my mother's lover, which my own mother sponsored because she became so afraid of me that she thought I was better off dead. Finally, I defeated the merchant chancellor who had put me on the throne as his puppet, and I seized absolute control over Qin.
Qin Shi Huang paused to catch his virtual breath.
And then I turned 22.
Zack's jaw fell. After a few seconds of silence, he stammered,
"Okay, and where's the part where we're similar in any way?"
"Really? You don't see it?"
Qin Shi Huang changed back to his original teen form. His voice dropped low again.
"Being raised by single mothers? Being ostracized for an association with a country you didn't even grow up in? Being forever caught between two worlds?"
"That is a massive reach."
"Is it? It makes me understand you. You cling so hard to morality out of a desperation for others to like you. You think they'd stop treating you like an outsider if you were a good boy who did everything they wanted. This is your greatest weakness. If you want any true power over your life, you must stop caring so much about what others think."
I...
Zack couldn't make proper words fall out of his mouth. Qin Shi Huang drifted closer.
"Listen, kid, you aren't always going to be different. Accept that. Accept that right now.
No matter how you try to fit in, the people around you will never truly see you as one of them.
Because you are not. You have your own background, own heritage, own story. You cannot earn true respect by pretending to be someone else. Deep down, you know this, or you wouldn't be hungering for the power to stand up for yourself and not pretend anymore."
This is totally not what I was talking about.
Zack finally found a coherent train of thought.
I'm not worried about what others will think of me. I'm worried you're a tyrant supervillain who thinks doing terrible things is okay because you have a tragic backstory. So I have no idea what you're really dragging me into.
I'm dragging you into the business of keeping China from shattering into another warring states period. Or worse,
Qin Shi Huang said.
The madness I went through in my life made me realize the wars had to stop.
There were so many wild spirits running around, messing with people's heads that everyone was fighting each other, drawing lines between us versus them for the smallest reasons. Finally, I decided the only way my life would make sense was if I erased those lines. No more borders. No more individual states to start wars with each other. I could no longer be torn between Qin and Zhao if I ruled both of them, and Han, and Chu, everything else. I know you and your modern mind won't agree with my reasoning, but it doesn't change what I've done and how China was born from it. Now I must defend China, my greatest creation. Think of me as a father protecting my child. Do my motives make sense now?
Oh my God, Zack grimaced. You're like one of those comic book villains who yells about destroying the world so you can rebuild it in your own image.
That is precisely what I did.
Qin Shi Huang cocked a brow.
And no one else in history can say they did it as well as me.
Now you're just humble bragging.
Kid,
Qin Shi Huang scoffed.
There's nothing humble about me.
Zack groaned, massaging his cheeks beneath his portal lens.
All right, Qin Shi Huang went on. I've given you my life story and motivations. Frankly, I don't care if you approve of them, and I see no point in you struggling with them. Working with us is the only way to get your mother's spirit back. So get some sleep. You'll need your qi at full charge to handle what comes next.
Qin Shi Huang vanished with a snap of his fingers, which Zack was certain wasn't necessary in any way whatsoever. With a heavy sigh, Zack slumped back onto his pillow. He scrolled through some pictures of him and his mom on his phone, taken during their picnics and rare trips out of town.
But looking at her bright smile only made him think of how it wasn't there anymore.
How her body was lying halfway across the planet, an empty husk sustained by a bunch of whirring hospital machines. And how in 12 days, the demon who had her spirit would grow strong enough to rip it apart and consume it. Dread throbbed in Zack's chest. He imagined his mom trapped in the demon's claws, scared and confused, seeing nothing but darkness all around and feeling the claws squeeze tighter day by day. Tears pricked Zack's eyes and fell on his pillow. Dampening it, he clenched his fists. Fine. If working with a tyrant was what it took to get her back, then that was exactly what he'd do.